What's up, Bills Mafia? It's Joe Marino from the Draft Network, and I'm your host of Locked On Bills. Today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. They have amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. Happy Monday to you. It's cornerback day here on this podcast. We are going to tackle the tough questions when it comes to the Bills cornerback room entering the 2020 season, and you guys gave me so many great talking points to dig into here, so I really appreciate all of the outstanding questions that were sent in. Tomorrow is Twitter Tuesday here on this podcast. I have a ton. I'm not going to lie to you. You guys filled it up over the weekend, so I'm not necessarily starving for questions this week. So if you have anything, maybe hold it for a future week. But also keep in mind, we're going to do tackling the tough questions with the safeties, the special teams, and the coaches coming up. So if you have something that is appertuant to those areas, you can send those in to me, joe@thedraftnetwork.com, or hit me up on Twitter at @TheJoeMarino with a DM. But, you know, send in the Twitter Tuesday. Might have to bank some of them for next week because it is filling up quickly this week, which is awesome. And I love the engagement and all the great talking points that you guys are sending in. But today is all about cornerbacks. And throughout the course of this week, between today and then later on when we get to the safeties, we're going to talk a lot about secondary play, defensive backs, pass defense. And I think it's important right off the bat to mention that Sean McDermott and Leslie Frazier over the last years have combined to coach some outstanding pass defenses. The Bills were number one in the NFL in 2018 when it comes to passing defense, number four in the NFL last season when it comes to passing defense. They are doing things that work. And so while we may have some concerns about CB2, and we may have some concerns about the nickel spot, what McDermott and Frazier have combined to accomplish is outstanding. And so let's keep that in mind as we dig into some of these items. And, of course, we have a lot of good things to talk about with Trey White and Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer. So it's not all bad, obviously, but I just think it's an important thing to distinguish right off the bat here. As we've done for other positions, I want to start by looking at the depth chart and the salary implications for the players that make up the cornerback room. So let's mention first Saran Neal and Dean Marlowe. They're safety/nickel hybrid players, guys that can play down in the slot, but I think both can play safety. But I want to focus on them as part of today's discussion a little bit at least. So we'll mention them here. Saran Neal is signed through 2021. He's owed $824,000 this year, $991,000 next year. Dean Marlowe is on a one-year deal worth $1.3 million. He's a free agent after the season. Josh Norman is owed $5.8 million this year. He's a free agent after the season. Trey White, he's owed $3.2 million this year. He's owed $10.2 million next year as part of the Bills picking up his fifth-year option. And then he becomes an unrestricted free agent after the 2021 season. Teron Johnson, the Bills' slot corner, he's owed $911,000 this year, $1.1 million next year. Levi Wallace is owed $750,000 this year. He's a restricted free agent after the season. The Bills' seventh-round pick, Dane Jackson, he signed through the next four seasons at around $1 million per season. He's a free agent in 2024. Cam Lewis is in the mix here. He's owed $615,000 this year, $785,000 next year. Ike Brown, he's owed around $800,000 each of the next three seasons, and he's a restricted free agent in 2023. It's also worth noting EJ Gaines, who opted out of this season. He's owed $935,000 next year. His contract is frozen until next year, and he's an unrestricted free agent in 2022. The Bills released Akeem King. So I told you about him and him coming over from Seattle and the special teams ability that he's shown over the last couple seasons for the Seahawks, in addition to playing some slot and outside corner and tackling very well. But the Bills have already made the decision to move on from him, so he no longer is in this mix. So that's your cast of characters when it comes to the Bills' cornerback situation entering the season, and we've got a ton of really good questions to dig into here in just a moment. But first, let me tell you about rockauto.com. This is a family business that's been serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. You can go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They've got everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. You can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand, specifications, and prices that you prefer. Best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why would you spend up to twice as much for the same parts? Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Make sure you write "Locked On" there. How did you hear about us, box, so they know that we sent you. They have amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need over at RockAuto.com. All right, let's tackle those tough questions. The first one is a really important discussion point. It comes from Jason. He says, what number do you see Trey White getting with a new contract? Is $20 million a year something that could be reached? If so, I submit that it may be better to consider using draft capital to ensure landing a top-rated CB1 in the 2021 draft and let Trey go. As you reviewed in your recent podcast, McDermott is perfectly comfortable with defensive backfield fluidity, and they can still do a CB2 best veteran available approach on the other side. In my opinion, the Bills need to spend most of their money wisely to keep the window open longer with Josh Allen, who is going to be paid big money soon. All right, so let's talk a lot about Trey White and his contract status. All right, I have a lot of nuggets to give you here, and this is important because Trey White has developed into a marquee player in the league, one of the best cornerbacks in football. He makes game-changing plays on the ball. He's locked down in coverage, and he is a very important piece of the Bills' defense, right? They drafted him in 2017. He's the first player that McDermott drafted, and I'm sure they want him to be around for a long, long time, all right? But let's make no mistake about it. Trey White wants to get paid. Let me point to some very important evidence, recent evidence, that gives us some clues as to what Trey White could be looking for in terms of compensation. Let's go back to a few weeks ago when Joey Bosa for the Los Angeles Chargers signed a contract that is going to pay him $27 million per season. All right. And this is significant because Bosa signed for $27 million a season, Myles Garrett signed for $25 million a season, and those guys are defensive ends. And it's really interesting because the highest paid cornerback in football is making about $16.6 million on average per season. It's Darius Slay with the Philadelphia Eagles. Byron Jones is making right at $16.5 million. Those are the two highest paid cornerbacks in the NFL, and those deals were signed this offseason. Those were market-setting, market-breaking deals in the cornerback room. And so just a few months after these guys reset the cornerback market, you're seeing these defensive ends get $25, $27 million a season. So when this news broke, Darius Slay, the NFL's highest paid cornerback, he put out a tweet and he said, CB better be getting 22 to 23 come next year. Laugh out loud. A lockdown cornerback doesn't just fall off trees. So Marshawn Lattimore, who is in this group of young, talented cornerbacks that are all primed to get big deals here and redefine the cornerback market. It's him, it's Trey White, it's Marlon Humphrey with the Ravens, and it's Jalen Ramsey from the Rams. And so Marshawn Lattimore quote tweeted Darius Slay's tweet and said, I swear, and that's it. Then Darius Slay quote tweeted Marshawn Lattimore's tweet and said, y'all go get it, set that tone for the future. Marshawn Lattimore responded to that and said, I'm waiting on Jalen Ramsey and Trey White, laugh out loud. And then Trey White responded with, chill, I have 2 years left, with an emoji with the guy that's like got his hand over his chin and looking the other way. He said, y'all got it. I have to honor my contract that I signed, laugh out loud. A lot of people saw that initially and thought that, you know, oh, Trey White is just this team first guy that wants to play out his deal and then negotiate a new contract. No, 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 folks. He may be those things, right? Maybe he is a wonderful team first player, but this is a guy who is saying, I understand that if I wait and I'm the last one, I'll be the guy that is the highest paid corner. There was a lot of tongue-in-cheek when it comes to Trey White's response there. He said, chill, I have 2 years left with that emoji. And he said, y'all got it. I have to honor my contract that I signed, laugh out loud. That is all about him saying, no, 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 I want to be last. Y'all go get it. And then I'm going to one-up you. I'll be a little bit higher because the next corner that signs or the next premium player at any position is the one that gets paid the highest. It's why Myles Garrett signed for $25 million, and then a week later or 2 weeks later, Joey Bosa signs for $27 million a season. All right, so there's your first little clue there about where Trey White's mind's at. That was very much an indicator that he understands the waiting game. He understands that it's not good for him to be first. He wants Jalen Ramsey to get his deal done. He wants Marshon Lattimore to get his deal done because he knows if he's last, he's going to get paid the most. Then in his Zoom call where he scared everyone and said that he was undecided on playing football in 2020, which we know he ultimately decided not to opt out, and he's in for the season. He used the words generational wealth two different times in that and how important it was for him to create generational wealth for his kids and for his family, okay? The guy wants to be paid. Then in the same press conference, he said, quote, I know what I'm worth, and I know what I feel like I bring to the table for the team. It's a team game, but I know with what I bring to the game, I have a worth that's out there. There's a market out there for defensive backs. It's only going up, so I'll see what happens. And then one more little clue for you here. When Jamal Adams, his former teammate from LSU, got traded from the Jets to the Seahawks, right, for those two first-round picks, Tre'Davious White tweeted this. He said, you told me this was going to happen 2 weeks ago. Congrats, brother. Go do you and get what you deserve. No state taxes, by the way, with the eye emoji. And then he said, you lucky ass, with the crying emoji three times, like the laughing crying guy. Trey White is out there for big dollars, all right? Trey White for $20 million a year, that is a dream. That is a dream that he would sign for that. And I think that Darius Slay was very telling when he said 22 to 23 million. I think that's where these guys are going to fall in line. I think that this cast of corners, Ramsey, Lattimore, Marlon Humphrey, Trey White, those guys are going to sign deals that pay them in that range of 22 to 25 million dollars a season. So when you say 20 million, that would be a bargain in my view. This cornerback market is going to be reset in a big, big way, and it's due in large to this influx of really good corners that are going to make it that way. There's a huge gap, right? $27 million for the highest paid defensive end, and then your highest paid corners at 16 and some change, just about 16, a little over 16.5. All right, Trey White is going to be part of this group that gets these cornerbacks into the mid-20s-ish. So there you go. That's what it's going to take to bring back Trey White. So we're talking about him signing like a four-year, $100 million extension. Probably something like that. Now, back to the question and point that Jason made, and I brought this up on the podcast last week where I was talking about Sean McDermott's history with cornerbacks and even dating back to his time with the Eagles throughout the Panthers and then even with the Bills, he's never had the same starting outside corners for consecutive seasons ever. And he's done this deal where he continuously plugs in some random guy in a lot of cases as his CB2, whether that is Melvin White or it was Josh Norman as a fifth-round rookie in 2012, or Antoine Kaysan, who never played another snap after he was a CB2 for the Panthers in 2014. Peanut Tillman in his final year, opposite of Josh Norman. He started two rookies in 2016 in James Bradbury and Darrell Worley. We know in 2017 it was Trey White and E.J. Gaines. And then, you know, remember, Trey White was a rookie and E.J. Gaines already had his injury problems. And then in 2018, it was Trey White with this host of guys between Vontae Davis, Phillip Gaines, Ryan Smith, Levi Wallace. And then, of course, last year we know it was Trey White and Levi Wallace. This year it's probably Trey White and Josh Norman. This is what McDermott's always done. And it's also important to note that Sean McDermott has coached a top 10 NFL defense in six of the last eight seasons. So while he's never had the same primary starters at corner in consecutive seasons, and a lot of times it's a guy like in the last year of their career or some random rookie, Sean McDermott gets it done. Now, I still think that it's important for him to have that guy, right? I want the Bills to pay Trey White $25 million a season and keep him around for a long, long time. I am for that. I'm also for them solidifying the CB2 situation with a talented player. You don't have to make it this hard, Sean. That's what I would say to Sean McDermott. If I could sit down and have lunch with the guy, I would say, brother, you're making this way harder than it has to be. Just draft a good cornerback in the first or second round to go with that guy that you're going to pay tons of money, and then just let that evolution and that cohesiveness come together with two good guys. Because here's the deal. When Trey White's your CB1, if I'm the cornerback or the quarterback for the team that's facing the Bills defense, I'm throwing at the guy that Josh Norman's covering, and I'm throwing at the guy that Levi Wallace is covering. I'm not going at Trey's guy. And that's why I have been preaching and I've been saying, get this CB2 thing figured out, because that's the guy who's going to get targets. Levi Wallace, as the Bills' second corner last year, was targeted 105 times. That is a spot that's going to be popular to go with the football for opponents. And that was my big selling point that I was trying to get through throughout this entire offseason, that, Sean, don't make it this hard on yourself. It doesn't have to be this way. Get a good player there. But here we are with Levi Wallace and Josh Norman, who we're going to talk a lot more here in just a minute. I don't think it's smart to continue in this course. I would find my long-term answer. You get a rookie on a rookie deal for four seasons, and they're cheap, and they can probably be good players. Sean McDermott has a great track record of developing cornerbacks. So I think it's important that we look back through this entire exchange that Trey White's had, these quotes that he's had, these things he's put on Twitter, and I think it gives us a lot of clues about where he thinks his market's going to be and what his intentions are with this contract. Maxwell Sharp says, out of all of our defensive backs, who is most likely to finish with the most sacks in 2020? I thought this was an interesting question. So I went back and I looked, and I figured out how many times each one of them blitzed last year. How many times did they rush the passer? Because this is going to give us some clues as to who's going to have those opportunities to get sacks. Well, Jordan Poyer blitzed 37 times. Taron Johnson blitzed 24 times. Micah Hyde blitzed 15 times. Saron Neal 11 times. Kevin Johnson 9 times. Dean Marlowe 8 times. Trey White 7 times. Levi Wallace 3 times. I think the obvious answer here is Jordan Poyer. We know that he's going to get the most opportunities to blitz, and I think that he will come away with the most sacks. Last year, he only had one sack. So it's not like the Bills are getting tons of sacks from defensive backs. So it could be the first guy to get two. Is the guy that winds up leading the team in sacks from a defensive back standpoint. Mr. Keller says, for your podcast on Monday, is Levi Wallace as bad as fans make him out to be, or is it because he is across from Trey White and isn't at that level? I'm not sure what the analytics are on him, but he seemed to play good to me. So this is a good question, Mr. Keller, because no, Levi Wallace isn't that bad of a football player. Again, he's been the primary starter really for the last two seasons on a top four pass defense in the NFL. He's not that bad. The concern with Levi Wallace is that he's a limited football player, right? He's 6 foot, 179 pounds, and he runs a 4.63 with a 33-inch vertical. He's lanky, he's weak, and he's not explosive. And that's tough in the NFL, right? You go up against these receivers that are twitchy and fast, and they know where they're going in terms of running routes, and you don't know where they're going, and you have to mirror them. It's kind of a requirement to be a better athlete at cornerback, to give yourself a chance. Now, I know the Bills run a lot of zone coverage. They bracket a lot of routes, but at the end of the day, every zone coverage eventually becomes man coverage. And if you don't have the athletic ability to close and beat guys to spots and cap routes because you're physical and strong and good in press coverage, you're going to have a hard time. And that's the thing with Levi Wallace. He's just limited. He just doesn't have the size, and he doesn't have the explosiveness, and he doesn't have the play strength. And so because of that, he just has his own limitations. Now, at the end of the day, this is a player that over the last two seasons has been, like I said, a fixture on the Bills' defense. 41% of the snaps in 2018 as a UDFA, and 2019, 76% of the snaps. Now, in 2018, in those seven games that he started, the guy was lights out. 13 of 26 against his coverage. It's a 50% completion percentage, and he gave up a passer rating against his coverage of 76.3. Now, next year, or last year, right, the next year after 2018, last season, he started all 16 games. He was targeted 105 times. He gave up 69 completions for a completion percentage of 65.7, allowed 682 yards, three touchdowns, and a passer rating of 85.5. That's still not that bad of a number, right? It's okay. I think what it comes down to is that there were times last year when he went up against better receivers where you saw those limitations really, really start to show up, where I even said it after some games, after we did the recap shows on Monday, I talked about him getting big boyed. And I think he's just a player that's maxed out and he's plateaued. And here's the thing. If that's the case, that's okay, right? That's okay. The Bills have been able to get by with that. But for me, I've been yearning for a more talented player without those limitations, because I think it's achievable. I don't think it's been there's not been opportunities for the Bills to get a better player at CB2. So this is a little bit of a discrepancy between my own personal opinions and what the Bills have done, and it's results-oriented, right? And so the Bills are getting good results overall. I personally feel like they can be better with a more talented player at CB2. And I think there's been plenty of opportunities in the draft to get that done. But no, to answer the question, I don't think he's as bad as a lot of fans make him out to be. He's just plateaued and he's limited. William says, if for some reason our CB2 spot completely collapses in a worst case scenario situation, is there any free agent you think could be a decent enough to fill that role, or do you see the Bills trying someone like Dane Jackson, assuming Wallace and Norman either get hurt or are horrible? Well, again, I think the floor is Levi Wallace, and who knows what Josh Norman's got left, right? This is the system that made him successful in the past. It's a much better situation than Washington, who tasked him with a lot of man coverage, which is an unreasonable request, and the Bills have a lot better pieces around Josh in the secondary. Now, I did look. There's two cornerbacks. I went and looked at the players that weren't signed. There's two cornerbacks that I thought were reasonable. Dre Kirkpatrick, who was released from the Cincinnati Bengals in March, a former first-round pick of theirs. He's had some injury stuff, but I thought he was a reasonable idea. The other one was Mo Claiborne, who has played most recently for the Chiefs, former first-round pick of the Cowboys. So those were the most reasonable corners that I thought had enough game experience and appeal that if you kind of had to go outside of what you already have to get a player to kind of give yourself a chance, those are the two names that came to mind. Scrug says, what is each cornerback's best trait? What is their weakness other than athleticism? Who starts game one opposite of Trey? Really good questions here. We'll keep this about Trey White, Levi Wallace, and Josh Norman. As far as who starts week one opposite of Trey, I think that the Bills coaching staff really likes Levi Wallace, right? I mean, Sean McDermott is on record of saying that Levi Wallace represents everything that he wants in a Buffalo Bill. That says a lot. And let's not forget, he started the last 23 games at cornerback for the Bills opposite of Trey White, and that pass defense has been outstanding over that span. So we have to keep that in mind. Now, if Josh Norman has this edge and this ability about him to come back and thrive in that scheme, and he's an upgrade over a player that we think is kind of capped, then he has a chance to be it. I will give you my honest prediction. I think Levi Wallace is the starter week one. As far as each corner's best and worst trait other than athleticism, of course you had to say that because honestly, that is the right answer. Even Trey White's not a great athlete for the position. And my goodness, Josh Norman definitely isn't, and neither is Levi Wallace. So Trey White, best trait I put down as ball skills. I think that his ability to make game-changing plays on the football, whether it's intercepting it or forcing a fumble, have been difference-making in a lot of Bills games over the last three seasons. Just think about those big-time plays that he's made late in games that change the course of a football game. I think that's what makes him special. It's just not the coverage ability. There's a lot of good cover corners out there. It's the ones that can make big-time plays in the ball that that are your upper echelon guys. As far as Trey White's biggest weakness, I would say tackling. Last year, he missed 13.4% of his tackles. The year before, he missed 11.5% of his tackles. So that's something that needs to improve, and I think it's his biggest weakness outside of not necessarily having wonderful recovery speed. For Josh Norman, I think his best trait is football IQ. He's a guy that has thrived in zone coverage, cueing the backfield, reading route combinations, getting into throwing lanes. That's what he does well. As far as his weakness, I just have to put man coverage. I know that that's kind of a cop-out because it really does speak to athletic limitations, but if you're asking Josh Norman to carry a receiver vertically down the field alone, every single receiver in the NFL can run faster than him. Literally every single one. So you just can't have him do that because it's a foot race problem and he can't win them. For Levi Wallace, I think his best trait is his work ethic. Talking about a walk-on at Alabama that became a starter for Nick Saban, that was a UDFA in the NFL, that was on the practice squad, that became a starter for Sean McDermott for the last 23 games. And he won the award for the most improved lifter this offseason. He's a guy that just grinds, man. And the cards always stacked against him. And he comes out earning opportunities. And good for him. I think that's something that is invaluable about him that, you know, leads coaches to give him chances. Because, you know, it's, again, he's a limited football player. But because he works his ass off, he gets chances. As far as his worst trait other than athleticism, I would say play strength. I think that's something that really shows up is just whenever he's challenged with contact at the top of routes, whenever he's challenged in contested situations in terms of, you know, jockeying for the football or, you know, he just doesn't win in those situations. So I think it's getting bullied by more physical receivers. Kyle's question is, regarding the cornerback situation, what worries you more, the situation at CB2 or nickel corner? Levi Wallace proved to be a serviceable starter for the defense last season, even though he is limited. I'm hopeful that as he enters his third season, when most players hit their prime, he will be able to take a small enough step forward and be able to hold that position down and play above a lot of people's expectations. Teron Johnson has shown injury concerns and some inconsistency. We were able to have some success with Saron Neal and Dean Marlowe filling in against bigger matchups, but if Johnson goes down, who would be the fill-in as a smaller, quicker nickel to match up against the smaller, shifty slot receivers that they will see in Hunter Renfrow, Jamison Crowder, and Julian Edelman? Because it's not Josh Norman. Do you see either Akeem King or Dane Jackson stepping up and claiming either of those positions if we get into a revolving door situation? Really good question, and I would agree with you that I have a bigger concern with nickel depth than I do at cornerback because if Taron Johnson does go down, you are going to have a hard time matching steps with those jitterbug slots, like you mentioned. And no, I don't think Dane Jackson is an option for that because Dane is not a great athlete either. He's physical, he's very aggressive, but he doesn't have recovery and makeup athleticism to get himself out of trouble, and I thought that was his biggest issue on tape at Pitt. So I don't think that the Bills have a natural option for that role, to be completely honest with you. So you would be relying on, at that point, I think, a guy like Saron Neal using his physicality and his ability to get hands on guys to be disruptive more so than his ability to naturally mirror those patterns. So I think you make a good point, and I would be more concerned about nickel depth than anything. Matt says, I was disappointed we did not see the Bills add a big nickel or true second cornerback early in the draft. That said, McDermott and company have shown the ability to develop or at least maximize the utilization of their defensive backs. Is this a smart strategy where the Bills know they have a strength in that area and consequently can afford to spend less draft capital on it? Or am I wearing rose-colored glasses? No, and I think this kind of goes back to something we talked about earlier, is that I think McDermott makes it harder than he has to by being so reliant on his ability to maximize defensive backs and take advantage of guys that don't have great athletic profiles. You know, Takiyo Spikes, whenever I had him on the podcast a few weeks ago, he said something about McDermott that really stuck out to me. He said, Coach McDermott is the type of guy that understands it's not what he knows, it's what his players know. And I think that is a big reason why he's able to get production out of, you know, guys that don't have great athleticism at cornerback because he knows how to teach and have them understand coverage responsibilities. And that matters a ton, but it doesn't have to be that hard. Yeah, McDermott's made this work. There's no question about it. He's got a long resume of doing it, but just go get some friggin' talented guys and teach them what to do. And I think that you'll be a happier coach for it, and the Bills will have even better success when it comes to their pass defense. Brad says, the Bills played Cerron Neal on the outside some last year, i.e. the Jets game, and I was wondering if you could look at Cerron's performance in coverage on the outside and break it down for us listeners who aren't as proficient in evaluating the players. How would you rate his performance compared to the other cornerbacks on the team? I understand he mainly plays the big nickel role, but could he be a dark horse in contributing as the cornerback this year? Thanks for keeping us all informed and entertained as I love your podcast. Thank you, Brad. So let me tell you what I wrote about Cerron Neal when I studied him coming out of college. And I think this is applicable to the player he is now in the NFL. I feel very comfortable with my evaluation on him and kind of how things have went to this point. I said, Cerron Neal has been a versatile defender in college with experience as a linebacker, safety, outside corner, and slot corner. His NFL role also should include wide-ranging utilization given his skill set. Neal is best at corner and bump-and-run coverage where he can disrupt routes early. With that said, he doesn't have enough long speed to be trusted on an island. From an off-man coverage perspective, Neal is too susceptible to allowing an inside release. Overall, he plays with a high degree of physicality but lacks a natural feel in coverage. In year one, Neal is likely to be a special teams contributor that may get some looks in sub-packages. By year three, Neal has the upside to be a matchup-specific option on defense. I think that's what Neal is, a guy that we're happy exists for special teams. He can play some slot for you. He can play some safety for you. If you want to play him outside against a more physical, bigger X receiver and ask him to play, you know, press coverage on the line of scrimmage, that's what he can do. But he's not a guy that at any point in studying him in the NFL or from his college tape that I ever thought had very good natural coverage instincts, a guy that can really read route stems, understand where they're taking him, know where to break, know how to cue the backfield and get into throwing lanes, know how to leverage routes. It's not something he does. Now, super physical. He's got a good athletic profile in terms of explosiveness. He's not necessarily a guy that has great long speed, but he's a matchup-specific defender, and I think that's what he's become for the Bills, and I think that's his ceiling, and that's valuable because the Bills are in sub, you know, basically 80% of the time, so there's always going to be work for him, but in a full-time role outside, I think he's just too limited in different ways than Levi Wallace to really be a regular out there. Again, if you're going up against a team that, let's say you were playing the Bills and you knew that they were going to play Duke Williams a good amount, that would be a situation where you would say, Cerron Neal, you're going to be on top of Duke Williams every time he's in the game. And that's the role that he will play because he can match that physicality. But he's not a guy that, you know, you're going to want to have go up against Devontae Parker or Tyreek Hill or, you know, those types of receivers. You know, I gave you two very different receivers, but, you know, a more nuanced player like Parker or a speedster like Hill, they're going to eat him alive. So, again, I think he's a matchup-specific player that is going to make his living on special teams. Now, I normally end these Tackling the Tough question series with my own set of questions at the end. But I'll be honest, you guys gave me exactly what we needed to cover it. Everything that I was planning on talking about, I was able to kind of cover within the discussions that we've already had. So I don't have anything else to add. This was outstanding. Appreciate your engagement and what you guys did to make this a very thorough discussion. And I hope that it gives you really good perspective on the Bills cornerback situation entering the season and what we can expect from the key contributors. Again, tomorrow is Twitter Tuesday. Wednesday, as of now, will be our Tackling the Tough questions when it comes to the Bills safety position. So if you have anything for that, hit me up on email, joe@thedraftnetwork.com, or shoot me a DM on Twitter @TheJoeMarino. Let's have another great discussion just like we did with cornerbacks when it comes to safeties. Again, we're going to do specialists. We're going to do coaches for closing out the Tackling the Tough questions series. Thanks so much for listening. As always, I do kindly ask that you share, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Look forward to catching up with you again tomorrow.